You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer. You know, there's a bunch of different ways that you can bring revenue into your business. And for most businesses, we think about the front end of the relationship, the how do we get more people in the front door or to the website or I was going to say calling us on the phone, but I believe I should use the phrase ringing us up based on who my guest is today. What we often neglect, however, is how to build on a relationship that's already been established, how to nurture those relationships and build out more sales opportunities for ourselves with the audience we already have buying from us or the audience that's already demonstrated an intent to buy from us. And that's what we're going to dive into in today's conversation with Toby Chapman, who is joining me from the UK, which is why I said ringing us up. Anyway, Toby, welcome.
Yeah, hi, David. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to getting on with this.
Indeed. So let's do like a little bit of background on the work that you do. And it's informed in part by the story that you shared with me briefly before we hit record. You started doing work in email marketing as a copywriter initially for clients, but you've now morphed into a more specific and probably more valuable for your clients area in email and also SMS marketing. Why don't you give us a little bit of more detail?
Yeah, correct. So as you mentioned, started with just email copywriting as a whole and copywriting as a skill, which in my opinion is essential across all areas of your business, whether it's landing pages, cold outreach, etc. So I thought it was a valuable place to start. Probably did that for around a year before thinking maybe I should, go a bit deeper with this, and stumbled down the rabbit hole that is e-commerce and email marketing and sort of retention marketing as a whole, and pivoted to offer that exclusively to direct consumer health and wellness brands, basically working to improve their profits and retention at the bottom of their funnel.
So I want to spend some time on this concept of retention marketing, right? So I talked in the opening about the place that most businesses focus, which is the front end of the relationship. Talk to me about why you see retention as such a valuable part of the revenue equation.
Yeah, of course. So obviously, like you said, a lot of businesses place so much emphasis on the acquisition side of things, and whilst that is definitely important and it's essential for any business, it shouldn't take or it shouldn't trump retention head and shoulders. It shouldn't be miles above it. And I think the importance with why retention is so good is that these people have they've either already purchased or they've shown intent, they've showed interest. So actually getting that repeat sale or that first sale, it's far easier and it's far cheaper than, say, paid ads or whatever other avenue you're using for acquisition. So it's just that you're making the most of your assets that you already have as opposed to going out of your way and trying to find new ones.
And by the way, I 100% agree. And the fact of the matter is that there's likely a lot of missed opportunity based on that. Let's break it down a little bit further, though, because both you and I have mentioned customers you already have, as well as those who have shown intent. Can you talk a little bit about that latter one, the shown intent piece?
Of course. So obviously, this depends massively on the business itself and what they offer. But this could be even just signing up to your email list. They've obviously had a look at your website, whatever it is, or they've given your contact details in the in-person store. So they've actually visited your site. They've explored around. So there's clearly some kind of interest, or they had some reason to visit you. another way of intent or a form of intent could be, you know, they viewed a product of yours and they've added it to a cart, or, you know, so there's various ways that they can show some interest but not actually go down and make the purchase, with I think the main one just being actually, you know, exploring around and trying to find a little extra information. But in today's, you know, economy and with how many businesses and brands are popping up, there's far more choice, so it's not as easy as they land on the first website or go to the first store and say, yeah, this is the one. So you just need to continually nurture them and engage with them to eventually cross them over the line.
Yeah. The idea that somebody has taken the time to, you know, be on a website, select an item and put it in a shopping cart, even though they may not then finalize the purchase, that absolutely shows intent. I'm curious if there are, you know, and we're talking specifically about e-commerce businesses here, but hopefully this is applicable in other ways to other types of businesses. Capturing a lead on a website, getting them to sign up for an email list can be done in lots of different ways. And I'm curious from your perspective, because you're looking at this more broadly, are there smarter ways and less smart ways to collect somebody's information which might pre-qualify them or disqualify them as a likely good or bad lead?
Yeah, so I think a big one that isn't utilized enough is, say, in-person events or webinars. So any kind of, you know, information event. Now, if it's an in-person event, obviously most people will have some kind of piece of paper that they simply, when they come and they give their email address, their contact details. So there is the risk with this that people give a fake email address. Mm-hmm. So the data might not be as clean as you'd like. But with webinars, obviously, nowadays you can run these online on LinkedIn or other social media platforms. So that's going to be fine when they give their email address there. And I think a big one that's, there's a lot of potential with it, is a QR code on some kind of, whether it's obviously not a receipt if they haven't made a purchase, but some kind of, say, a letter or whatever it is from you that they can scan, and it signs them up for the list directly. So it's all just really easy ways of making more out of what you're already doing, mm-hmm. as opposed to doing a whole separate event or whatever it is to purposely capture these emails.
What about things that you might do on a website or someplace where you're capturing somebody's contact information, but might not be good quality in terms of demonstrating intent, right? So we're talking mostly about how do you more effectively position your business to sell directly through direct communication rather than paying for ads. How do I know that I'm getting, or how do I avoid, I guess is the question I'm asking here, getting a bunch of people giving me their information, but they have not demonstrated any real interest in you know, what I have to offer. I'll think, just this is something that's been classic in my world for a very long time. Doing a raffle, giving away something that has absolutely, you know, an iPad or something like that, that has nothing to do with what your business actually does or problem it solves or what you actually sell. Like, that's a classic example of a list filled with people who have no intent to buy. I'm curious if there are other examples you can think of.
Yes, that's a good point that you make there. It also applies massively in the e-commerce space. Is any kind of giveaway, you're going to get a load of people sign up because the word free, people bounce on it, they jump on it. Everyone loves free stuff. So yeah, I think giveaways, whilst they do have their place, if they are sort of, if it's related to your service or your product, it's definitely viable, but just know that the quality of these leads isn't going to be as good. But I think a way to counteract this is, like you mentioned with the pop-ups or other information collection points, is have pre-qualifying questions. Collect that zero party data. So what are their pain points? What have they tried in the past? What are they looking to get out of your product or service? All of this information you can start collecting from the get-go. And then that makes your actual communications after much more tailored and personalized towards those people, because you know what they're looking for. And when people do eventually make a purchase, you can look at this zero party data and see, oh, you know, say 80% of our customers all said that this one pain point on the pop-up collection, they all had this one pain point. So then you can go back and retarget other people who are looking for the same thing.
I love that. And you've put an idea into my head that I'm really curious on your take on, which is, I know that the work that you do is very much data driven. I've spent some time on your website, and it's an area that I got to say a lot of folks in the email marketing world, let alone the marketing world in general, don't spend a lot of time looking at data that helps inform the decisions they make. So here's a question that I'm often thinking about with clients when it comes to the type of data that we collect and the quantity of data that we collect at what point in the relationship. So I'll give you two examples, right? There's the go to a website, which simply gives you some value exchange for an email address. Maybe in the e-commerce space, and we'll get to this in a moment, but you know, get a $10 off coupon for your first purchase, right? In exchange for your email address. Versus you were talking about asking or collecting data, getting information from them to get to know them a little bit better, right? Asking for a lot more detail. A classic example in our world, the marketing world, is HubSpot. HubSpot has lots of white papers on their site. But to get access to those white papers, you got to fill out an extensive form with information about who you are, what size organization you have, what your role in the organization is, maybe some other qualifying things. And so there's a potential friction to keep certain people out. So I'm curious, like from your perspective, again, what is on the consumer-facing environment, when is it good and bad to be asking all of the detailed questions to be able to, connect with a customer in a deeper way?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the initial point of contact, you don't want to ask too much because, like you said, as soon as you start adding too much friction, there's going to be a huge drop off in conversions. So the initial collection is just the basic questions. Once you've got this data, you start to email them and follow up with them. If they still haven't taken action, then it's good to follow up to say a feedback form or a survey and have some kind of incentive or reason for them to actually give this information. So I know the discount thing and the coupons is something that we'll talk about later, but whether it is offering something like this or a free month of your service, whatever it is, and you can start collecting this information. And as you start to collect this, you know what's stopping people from, crossing over the line, which you can feed back to the start and improve the whole system.
Can you paint that out in like a real world scenario? Is there a project that you've worked on where you've done that? And what were the sort of the real tangible things that might happen in such a scenario?
Yeah, so it is very similar to what I say. Obviously, collect that information from the start emailing them. If someone hasn't purchased, say, in e-commerce, like you mentioned, it's usually an initial discount or coupon. If they haven't purchased by, say, the fourth or fifth email, then you know it's not like giving them an extra coupon or an additional discount isn't going to cross do the job. There's something more. Maybe they don't understand how the product works or there's not enough trust there. So that's when you go in with one of these surveys that I mentioned. So you can use something like Typeform, Jotform, any survey collection platform, and just simply say what's going on. They give their information and they can then be retargeted in a separate flow. So a flow is like an automated messaging sequence based on these results, and now you're hitting the right points, you're addressing these objections, and once you address the objections and build up or break down that trust barrier, they hopefully they're going to purchase.
This is a deep topic and one that I think I'm letting on that I know a little bit about email marketing, not as much as you do, but I'm curious, in terms of, there's a few different directions I want to go here. So how compliant, I guess, is you know, how much of an uptake is there in the scenario that you've just outlined? Obviously, you know, we have all kinds of things in the marketing communication space around getting people to engage with us as a business. And so I'm thinking through the scenario you've just laid out. Somebody doesn't respond with a purchase. What is going to incentivize them to then say, all right, I'm not buying anything from you, but I'll happily fill out a form telling you why I'm not buying from you, right? That doesn't sound immediately like something that people are likely to do. So there's got to be some psychological or monetary or other sort of incentive, which you kind of, you know, suggested there might be. And I'm curious, what does this look like in the based on data that you've seen, based on sort of just anecdotal experience, to say to a business, yes, this makes sense to do because you actually get this benefit on the other side of having run a campaign like this.
Yeah, of course. So like you said, you're not going to get a load of people doing it, because if they've got to that point in, say, the welcome sequence or whatever sequence it is, chances are they're not going to want to communicate, but you will still get a small portion that will do it. And from this information, like I said, it's the feedback loop. You can then go back to the start and start addressing them straight away. So even though it's not a lot, it's something, and that all ties in nicely. And in terms of the reason to get them to do the survey, this is something that you have to test massively. And again, it depends on the business. But say if you're some kind of SaaS or tech, you know, app, offer a free month service or a free month of, say, if you've got a premium package, something like that, something that is added on top of the initial incentive that you offered that makes them think, right, maybe I'll give this a go.
Okay, you're leading into something that we've been hinting at for a while here. So I think we probably should talk about it, because you talked about adding something on top as opposed to something we've kind of said, well, maybe you don't want to do earlier on in our conversation, which is discount. Can you dig into that topic a little bit more? Because I happen to agree with your perspective on this.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the listeners will know, if you go onto some kind of e-commerce website or some platform that's selling something, it will be the traditional give us your email, get 10%, or give us your email, get £5 off, $5 off. Whilst this does, it does people sign up and they will convert off the back of it, there are smarter ways to do it. And especially in the e-commerce space where cash flow and profit margins are a problem, a great way of doing this is cashback. So offer it to them in store credit or like a gift card, whatever it is. And this way, you've still got cash coming into the business, so you can deploy this in other areas, whether it's ads or some kind of, you know, qualitative research. And the actual customer has a reason to come back. They've got this money just sat there to be used. They're not just going to want to leave, say, £5 just lying around. They're going to want to use it, which obviously they'll have to add money on top of this. And if there is any e-commerce brands or, you know, marketing agencies, a great app is called Fondue, which was recently acquired by PostScript, I believe. And they offer cashback as an option.
I love that. I've never thought about that sort of scenario, but it's great incentive. And what's more important is it brings us back to the main, you know, focus of your business, which is retention. Right? That the value that's sitting there in their account gets them to come back and spend more with the business. All right, let's broaden the conversation to kind of your general philosophy around email communications. And I'm curious to learn, because you've been doing this for a few years, if there are any models that you have, you know, sort of has informed the way you think about the content of emails, the types of things that get communicated. Immediately when I think of like the first time I ever learned about email marketing and campaign models or structures, the very first one I ever learned was Andre Chaperon's soap opera sequence from many years back. And so I'm always sort of curious, what are the other types of frameworks that copywriters tend to, you know, have informed the work that they tend to do?
It's a great question. So I think a lot of it is basically reading the emails that are in your inbox and seeing what emails you read all the way through. Once you find those, then understand what made you read all the way through. And there's a few great sort of email guys or email role models, if you want to call them. So Ben Settle, Chris, I might butcher his last name, or Zakowski, I think it is.
Starts with an O, that's all I know.
Yeah. Sean Anthony, there's some really, really good people out there. And I think the biggest thing with email is, and this, it doesn't just apply to e-commerce, it's every business, is it's seen purely as a sales channel and not an intimate communication channel. And people don't treat their subscribers as humans. They just treat them as trying to get a sale out of them. And that's what scares people off. So tying back to the points that we made early with zero party data and actual information that you know about these people, it's hitting these points, addressing objections, positioning yourself as the solution to their problems without actually directly selling your thing. And when that creates curiosity and you provide value, which is the biggest thing with emails, provide value, people will be more inclined to make a purchase. And there's various ways that you can provide value, whether it's a how-to guide on your product, addressing frequently asked questions, highlight, if you've got a blog, highlighting a certain blog article, and exploring that. There's various ways that you can do it. Quizzes. I could go on and on. But anything that isn't saying, here's a coupon, or we're running a flash sale, anything that gets them to read and adds some kind of value to their life, builds that relationship. And then if you do end up running a sale, they're much more inclined to take up the offer.
You've given a couple of really good examples of things that I wouldn't intuitively think of, particularly like the quiz piece. Do you have a rule of thumb in terms of breakdown of sales to non-sales content, or the frequency or the routine in terms of, you know, including both or just one type of message within an email?
Yeah. So in terms of value to sales or promotional emails, we like to do an 80-20 split. So say if you're sending, well, I'm going to have to do some quick maths off the top of my head now.
Let's just say sending, five, because it's easy.
Yeah. Say if you're sending five emails a week, three to four, but ideally four would be value-based. And those are some of the things I mentioned. There's a whole load others. And that one would be a promotional email. Of course, this is more tailored towards e-commerce because their communication frequencies are much more. But if you're, you know, an offline business or something like that, and your email frequency is less, then maybe it would be worth just doing one promotion a month or only on key holiday dates. So I think in, I might get this wrong, I think in the US you had Labor Day recently.
We did, yes.
Right. So something on Labor Day, running a promotion for that. So 80-20 between promotion and sales, and the actual frequency per week massively depends on what you're offering. And it's something that you can test. People are scared to send more emails. They think it will scare away their subscribers, but they don't test it. So just gradually increase your frequency each week until we hit a point where it's diminishing returns. And that's, you know, that's the point where you can do that every week, get the most sales and not annoy your subscribers. And it's a win-win situation.
So you're specializing in a certain type of product in the e-commerce space, but both the sort of health, wellness and skincare, that sort of area where it's something that is very personal to the consumer. And I'm curious if there are differences in the way that you might approach communicating what you would communicate about in that space versus other consumer areas? And this is a leading question, but obviously in a B2B situation, it's going to be a different type of communication. Could you kind of walk us through what the differences might be in your area of specialty versus others?
Yeah, it's a good question. So with consumer packaged goods, so supplements, skincare, a lot of these, you know, have like a 30-day sort of buying cycle. So every 30 days, ideally, they come back. So a lot of the communications in the health and wellness space is digging into, it's as bad as it sounds, is digging into pain points. And like a common framework is problem, agitate, solution. So obviously, say skincare, someone's suffered with acne all of their life. It's, again, as bad as it sounds, you agitate this problem a little bit, and then you position your product as the solution. But this also applies to any other business. So I don't think there's any massive differences. They all tie into the same thing of positioning whatever it is you offer as the solution to what they're looking for, and addressing any objections, basically just being clear, avoiding any confusion, and creating engaging content. So I wouldn't say there's any massive difference. Obviously, with skincare and supplements, it's more about health and actual, themselves. Mm-hmm. But with a service, say if you're offering lead gen services or something like that, you dig into the point of maybe they've tried other agencies or service providers that screwed them over, or they've tried sending out cold emails themselves and it hasn't worked. So there's plenty that you can do. It's all just about positioning yourself as the solution, as I mentioned.
So I'm thinking in one particular area where problem agitate solution doesn't feel like it's as intuitive, and that's in a business where you're selling opportunity, or you're selling, this just popped into my head because as I'm looking at my image on the screen, I'm wearing a Charles Tirwhitt shirt that I purchased on their website. They send me emails every day. And by the way, they're always sales emails and they're always a discount. So maybe we should have a talk with them. But none of them are about solving a problem, really. They're all about opportunity and lifestyle. So I'm curious, like, what's the difference there? And is that a good or bad approach? Maybe we'll broaden it to not just talk about their campaigns, but businesses maybe in places where it's not obvious that they're solving a problem.
Yeah. So I think every business, when they're selling whatever it is they are, it's so similar with your top here, they might do an approach where they sell the actual benefits of wearing this shirt, whether it's you get some good looks when you go out for a meal or whatever it is. So whilst problem agitate solution or, digging into pain points might not be massive here, there's still other ways that you can sell the transformation. So maybe they had a really naff top in the past that ripped when they lifted up their arms or whatever it is. There's always some way that you can tie in previous bad experiences or solutions that they've tried. And show your product as the new solution, the one that actually works.
I love it. And I know I put you on the spot there. You did quite well in your response. Hey, Toby, we're at the end of our time together. I want to make sure that for folks who are curious to know a bit more about what you do, where they can best find you and connect to further explore the work that you're involved in.
Yeah, of course. So the main place would be Toby Chapman on LinkedIn. I basically make posts about retention marketing, specifically with e-commerce, but a lot of these principles can apply to other businesses.
Excellent. Well, I will make sure, of course, that that's linked. It's Toby, T-O-B-I, Chapman,
yes.
C-H-A-P-M-A-N. And I'm very thankful that you had time in your schedule. To join me today. Toby Chapman, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, David. It's been great.
Indeed. Folks, you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who might benefit from listening to today's conversation, please share this with them. In the meantime, my name is David Baer. We'll see you back here real soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.